centres, ABC Shop Online and DVD retailers.
So much is written about football, books, magazines, and it's migrated more recently from the back pages of the newspaper to the front. But most of what's written is about the pointy end, the players, occasionally the games, more often than not, likely the scandals. Little, though, is written about the fan, the people who love the sport and whose support is really crucial to its survival. And it's the same with any sport, isn't it? But massively so with football. And at the moment, I'm going to head towards the AFL side of football. A new book, The Whole of My World, looks at this often overlooked part of football, and it does it from an unusual point of view, that of the teenage girl who purely loves her footy. The author of The Whole of My World is Nicole Hayes, and she joins me now. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Liz. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Congratulations on a brilliant book. Where did the idea come from?
Frankly, from my own life. I was positively obsessed with football as a teenager, so I didn't really have to look too hard for modelling for that. I was a Hawthorn fan in the 80s, which is probably the best time to have been a Hawthorn fan, and I really couldn't think about anything else for a good 7 or 8 years. It really consumed my life. So when it came time to sit down and write something, I'd been writing for some time, I immediately sort of fell to that world and that place because I knew it so well.
Well, the main protagonist, Nicole, is Shelley, and this is your first novel. So how much of Shelley, or how much of you, is in Shelley?
Oh, you know, that depends on every interview I say something else.
It's really, well, tell me the truth.
Absolutely. Look, the trick is, you know, initially it was very autobiographical until I realised how boring I was. And I had to take a whole other turn. And once I set up her backstory, which is very different to my own, almost every page changed after that, and all of her decisions were driven by this family tragedy that really casts a shadow across her and her father and their whole lives. So in terms of the superficial things, there's probably a lot of similarities, but and obviously the love for football was there. And also, interestingly, Shelley isn't – she was playing football for most of her childhood, but – legally or wasn't eligible. So at one point the team said, listen, you know, we're going to try to get you a game, but if we can't, you're gone pretty much. And so they weren't able to get her a game because in the 80s, girls weren't allowed to play football. And she really resented that, and that really hurt her. And that happened to me. So I simply wasn't allowed to play any, or at least they tried to get me a game, and then whatever, you know, tribunal or organisation that was administering the body at the time said it's not safe for girls. So from being able to play underground, suddenly it was out in the open and I wasn't allowed to play at all, which really was pretty, I was about 12, pretty powerful moment for me.
So like Shelley, you were able to train and play with the boys at training, but as soon as it came to any sort of sanctioned game, you weren't allowed to do that. So how frustrating was that for you, and how did that affect your decisions then and your love of football?
In some ways it wasn't frustrating at all. I just accepted it. It's really interesting for me to look back. I gave Shelley a lot more umbrage about the whole thing than I had. It was after the fact that I examined it and really felt that was an injustice. But initially my reaction was, well, I wish I wasn't a girl. You know, it didn't occur to me that the culture or the practice or that social norm was wrong. It seemed to me that I was. And it's not like there were other girls around there playing, you know, that I could be jealous or envious of. So I knew that I was doing something that was different. But kids don't think too deeply about what's happening. And when it came time that I wasn't able to play, I remember being profoundly hurt, but not thinking for a moment that I could change things. And that was important for me, for Shelley to feel, if not perhaps in that world, she wasn't able to change that football club, to become more agent in her life. That was important for me to give her that power where I didn't really have it.
She's incredibly strong-willed at times and will stand up for herself. But then other times I wanted to shake her because she loses that will around certain things. How much was that a deliberate thing, or how much did really her personality almost craft itself?
everything that she did, every choice she made was driven, is driven by this tragedy. And she is stunted in a way developmentally. There are things she's had to do and deal with that a child shouldn't have to, in terms of, you know, losing her mother and her father trying to find a way in the shadow of this grief. Things that a lot of children don't ever have to do. So in some ways she's quite mature, but emotionally she's stunted. Her father is not able to connect with her in any meaningful way. Literally the only thing they can, well, you know, the logistics of life, but other than that, the only other thing they can talk about is football. That's their only other safe place. So, you know, she is going to be volatile. She is going to be inconsistent. She's a, you know, 14, almost 14, 15-year-old. She turns 15 during that's football season. She thinks she knows what she wants, isn't able to get it, and really isn't equipped to kind of maturely respond to it. And certainly in the face of her football heroes, Mick Edwards is the full forward who's been recruited from WA and is the connection she makes at the club. Anything he does is sacred to her. She really has no ability to be objective about his choices and his decisions. She is in absolute adoration of him.
It's interesting. In the book, she keeps saying that they're friends, but they really know so little about each other.
Absolutely. But that's her understanding of how people operate. You operate in a way that you are safe, which for her and her father is, you know, football. So this is, you know, a version of that in her mind. She doesn't know that that's an unhealthy way to be, that, you know, her and her father can't discuss anything of significance. He's effectively removed all trace of their history. She thinks that this is how you move on, by wiping your history. And so in her mind, this is taking on this new life, starting again, by creating this person from sort of year dot, starting all over again at a new school and with this new friendship that is the shape that she wants it to be, at least initially anyway.
That's a big theme through the course of this book, The Whole of My World, about starting again, about drawing a line under the past and then moving forward. Mm. But that moving forward brings her to the Glenthorne Falcons. It did my head in, Nicole, trying to figure out what clubs you were referring to, and the Warriors and all that sort of stuff. Why did you choose to make the clubs, I guess, recognisable but with a different name?
The different name is fairly obvious. I mean, I don't think any club really wants to be, you know, the AFL is fairly protective of its brand as a rule. And, you know, it's fiction. Although my experiences at Glenfree Oval were, you know, a model for this, the actual events and the characters are all fictional. So it wouldn't be fair to use a real club when it's not actually what happened. So that's why I changed the names. Keeping them similar, just me being entertaining, trying to entertain myself. I really wanted people to be actively trying to work out, oh, okay, if that's, you know, if that's Glenthorne, if that's Hawthorne, then who would have played them? What year did they lose? You know.
Yeah.
So I was messing with you.
So Shelley comes to the Glenthorne Falcons. Mm-hmm. She becomes a real fan, doesn't she? She turns up at training. It's almost a religious thing for her.
Absolutely, yeah. She's introduced to the club when she does start at her new schools. She really doesn't fit in particularly well, and the only connection she makes is with Tara Lester, who she witnesses graffitiing the desk with the Glenthorne Falcons symbol. So, you know, a kindred spirit. She identifies her as a kindred spirit, and Tara introduces her to the club. So from then on, it becomes their sort of weekly mantra. They go every Thursday, and as she gets the season progresses, she goes, you know, pretty much every training session she can. It's an obsession, because she, you know, really genuinely believes that she is somehow a part of the club's success and will be a part of it, that it's up to her in some way to help them win the premiership, which is her focus for the year. It's partly about her, this man, this hero who seems to respect her and, you know, care about her on a level that perhaps she doesn't have with anybody else. And also it's a way to avoid going home. Mm. Home is oppressive and sad. And for Shelley, really, that's her escape.
Shelley, sorry, Nicole, is Shelley's experience about belonging, or is it about filling a gap. It seems to me that when, you know, you look at Tara, Shelley's friend who has brought her to the football club, she's filling a gap. There's issues in her life. She's making up for something. And then you look at all the other fans who turn up to trainings. Are they all filling a gap? Is that what's feeding this obsession?
I think to some degree they are, yes. I mean, I don't think anyone obsesses better than a teenager. I think their singular focus on whatever matters to them is just extraordinary, and I love that passion. When it becomes debilitating, when it takes over to the point that they're not able to function in a healthy way outside of that, I do think there's something that they're fundamentally missing in their life, or at least that they feel that they're missing. And, you know, probably for a lot of them, it'd be some kind of positive role model, or even just a significant connection with someone who's in their life in a physical way.
So how does being, and you might have some experience of this then, it does come through in the book, how does being a teenage female obsessed fan differ from being a male devotee, like a young teenage bloke, in terms of how you're treated and maybe your motives? And that's something that, you know, gets teased out through the course of the book. People are questioning Shelley's motives.
Yeah, yeah. And that's all perception. I think I certainly remember the feeling that the boys at the, you know, in the cheer squad or the other fans were given, nothing was questioned about their motive. They were there because they love football. There was no question that it was anything other than that in terms of how the players perceived them, how the clubs perceived them, and probably the public and their own families. I didn't understand how I couldn't feel like that, why people couldn't understand that I could feel like that just because of the body I was in. I really did not understand. And it really, it was absolutely an ongoing conversation. It's a very blokey world, football in particular. I think a lot of sporting endeavours are, but football is very blokey. And traditionally, girls' roles and women's roles in football have been in the support or as wives or as mothers, not really genuinely as fans. I think that's changing to some degree, but I also think that, you know, the media loves the scandal that that's attached with the female footy fan. And there are certainly some girls and women there who find some kind of validation in being these, in playing these roles as focusing on the attraction and the and being with a footballer and the celebrity and status that goes with that. But there are genuine footy fans. There are genuine kids and women and girls who love the game, and it's not about the people and it's not about the celebrity.
Nicole, this might be something that goes not only to AFL but also across, I guess, rugby league, maybe rugby union. Do you think that perception will change when we see more women at the pointy end? And I'm not saying playing, because that's not going to happen in those competitions, but maybe, you know, in administration, in running the show. Do you think that's where the change has to come from, so that the female fan at that fan level can be validated in the fact that she just loves her football?
Yes, and I think it's already happening. But I actually do think it's in them playing as well. The girls' football is massive. It's the biggest growing demographic in AFL. Women's football has got really popular. There are teams every year, new teams, expanding competitions. So, you know, having a thorough understanding of the game by playing is absolutely an avenue into getting credibility when it comes to, you know, whether you're in the media reporting on sport or, yeah, in the administration side of things, the management. I don't think we're there yet, but realistically, if you can have a male coach who hasn't played football at a senior level, there's no reason why you can't have a female. Gender shouldn't be any issue. And I think that's manageable. Maybe not in my lifetime, alas. But, you know, it's a mental game. And if you look at American football, the managers and the coaches, they're not necessarily players.
My guest is Nicole Hayes. She's written a book, it's a young adult book called The Whole of My World, but I'm not a young adult anymore and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
Nicole, I didn't mean to sort of suggest that women won't play at the elite level. I think they're not, I mean, it's obvious they're not going to play in the AFL, but it's interesting that the AFL has one of its policies to have a fully elite broadcast, massive, like elite end women's competition by 2020. So that is another avenue, isn't it, that women can really become involved and hopefully become players in their own rights.
They certainly, this 2013 season, they had their first all-women representative match played right before an AFL game, the curtain raiser to the Demons and Bulldogs. I think it was in June or July. And that was groundbreaking right there. We've had some in the junior football level where girls are up to a certain age. I think it's 14 or 15, and then it's a case by case assessment playing in competitions that are predominantly boys. Where, you know, we've had a couple of girls who have won across the whole competition as best player. One of them in particular, I'm trying to think of her name, Natasha, I think, an Indigenous player from up north, won by a landslide MVP for the entire competition. It's, you know, I think certainly in the junior grades we can see more of that, and there's no reason at all why AFL can't be elite for women. I there's certainly enough support, I think, and that's only going to grow.
Looking back to your experience and maybe how things have changed now, did your experience of being told you couldn't play and then as a fan, did that affect your idea of what it was to be female?
Absolutely. I really resented my body. I resented that I was a girl. But that's what I saw the problem was, which shows how limited my imagination was back then. You know, it didn't occur to me that that was something imposed on me that should change. It made me feel sport was a big part of my life. I got, as I turned into an adolescent, I got slower, I got rounder, I didn't grow taller. So a lot of the things that I was able to do, I couldn't do anymore. And I only perceived it for some time anyway, for several years, as a negative, as, you know, a measure of the things I could no longer do.
Shelley seems incredibly vulnerable throughout this book. And she also seems quite naive. And I want to speak a little bit about role models, because it seemed to me that Shelley was looking for a role model. And throughout the book, we see that sort of allusions to the darker side of football. But Shelley doesn't really understand what's happening. She just sees these men as her heroes, as her role models. So does that reflect your experience in terms of not really understanding that darker side? And then what does it do to a young fan to come to the realization that their heroes aren't perfect?
It did. It was absolutely quite pivotal for me at the time. I think certainly in my case, I was able to compartmentalize things. So there were these kinds of people and there were these kinds of people, and they did these things in this situation, but they wouldn't do these things in this situation. And whether that's a coping mechanism or whether that might be even a fairly sensible way of approaching things, I don't know. But Shelley, she doesn't see them as men. She doesn't see them as people, as mortals. They are much bigger and greater than that. And she's not spending too much time examining the things she doesn't want to see. And that is absolutely a coping mechanism for her. All that she knows is these people are admired by everybody. Football in Melbourne is absolutely king, and it has been for a very long time. People who, you know, are sensible in any other place than any other world become quite stupid around footballers, famous footballers. They make concessions that they wouldn't ordinarily make. It's a really pervasive attitude. So the idea that a 14-year-old girl would be immune to that, I think it makes perfect sense that she would be very naive about the fact that they are men. They are men first, and they're surrounded by a lot of young girls. And that's problematic all the way through, even if nothing is directly acted upon or there's no... I think it's just fraught. There's real challenges until we can make some real changes about how, you know, men and women relate, and young girls in particular, how they relate to people that they admire.
And Shelley does admire these men and these footballers, but it's interesting, she does come to a pretty painful understanding, doesn't she, that the football club might not be the place to go searching for your role model.
Absolutely. The sort of further the season progresses and the more intense the relationship with Mick becomes, or the more important it becomes to her, the greater the wedge between her and her dad and between her and Tara. So the only two sort of really, and Josh is the boy she grew up with, who's literally the only person she still spends any time with or will deal with from her life before. So he's this constant reminder of what once was, and she's getting further and further away from all of those people the closer she gets to Mick. And of course that's going to come to a really disappointing and disastrous end, as it does on grand final day and the night afterwards. The challenge with this is, in my mind, this was the 1984 season, so there was a time when that feeling of loss, that profound disappointment of losing a grand final. 1984 was absolutely, I think, probably for most Hawthorn fans, the worst year ever. Maybe it's been changed. You know, we had 2012 wasn't great either, but 1984 we were meant to win and we didn't. And I wanted that whole sort of, that expectation that everything would be all right after this. that was always going to play into how she felt about Mick. And so when he's an agent in their decline, really by losing his cool, and the fact that they lose, he compounds that by bad behaviour effectively. That night was going to always be a problem. He was going to react. He was going to react in a human way to something that really affected him. And when you're already in a relationship that's problematic, that tends to be where you vent. And that's exactly what happens.
So Shelley, without giving anything away, she really does find her role models closer to home.
That's pretty much what she has to. What she realises is that her dad is limited as he is, and he does grow, but he's still never going to be perhaps the man he was before the accident. Well, that's why she has to shape herself, shape who she is, and draw for the stability and the strength and that sense of where she's going to be later on. And her the friends, the Josh's mum, Mrs. McGuire, is also a female role model for her. And it's true in adolescence that the most pivotal and the most powerful role model tends to be the parent. It's only really the very vulnerable children who perhaps don't have that stability at home where they go looking and tend to look towards negative role models in the celebrity world, whether that's sports people or movie stars or, you know, rock stars. That sort of thing tends to come from a vulnerability rather than from, you know, a healthy sort of normal process of growing up. So Shelley has to be able to find that connection with the things that matter, the people that matter most.
Nicole, it's a great book, The Whole of My World, and the subtitle is This Is What It Feels Like to Start Again. Congratulations on your first novel. There's so many really great themes running through it and so many great talking points that come out of it.
Thank you very much.
Summer with Liz.